I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations. Today, I am absolutely elated to have Nancy Lessord on Faith Conversations with me. Now, some of you may be saying, who? I've not heard that name. Now, others of you might be going, oh, I know that name. I know that name from Christian publishing or from somewhere. So the rest of us, we're going to find out more about Nancy Lessord. She's the daughter-in-law of Catherine Marshall. And if you don't know this, Catherine Marshall was a wonderful author, and specifically the book that I'm thinking of and going that we're going to talk about today with Nancy is Catherine's book, Christy, because it's the 50th anniversary of the publication of the book Christy. It was a New York Times bestseller, and we're going to talk more about that. A book that meant so much to me. In fact, I have 8 pages of quotes from the book Christy that I printed out today before this conversation with Nancy. So Nancy Lessord is the daughter-in-law of Catherine Marshall, author of Christy. She's a spokesperson for the Marshall and Lessord families. But I think this part's interesting. She grew up in Atlanta, Georgia during the turbulent civil rights era of the 1960s, where she learned firsthand as a teenager the impact that a young person can have on history. And she taught history in middle school and high school before becoming a lawyer, and has more than 30 years of experience as an intellectual property attorney, helping nonprofit organizations maximize their publishing assets. So very much involved in the publishing world. Nancy, welcome to Faith Conversations.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to be with you today.
Well, so the first part of my career I spent in broadcasting. I've just been doing this podcast. I'm in year 3 of the podcast, but for 31 years, I worked for Moody Broadcasting. 16 of those, I had a live radio talk show daily. And as a part of that, in the later years, we did a book club once a month with a literature professor, Dr. Rosalie DeRosay from Moody Bible Institute. And some listening to the podcast may know that name or be aware. Others have joined Faith Conversations, you know, down the road after my time at Moody, and so weren't aware of that. But one of the books that we read and discussed on the air was Christy. And partly because Dr. DeRosay said, we need to talk about this book and read this book because this is a beautiful picture of a strong female character. And in the best sense of all of that. And so we read and discussed Christy. And we will talk about the general storyline. I'll invite you to tell us about that in a moment. But give us a thumbnail sketch, would you, of Catherine Marshall, what you know and have come to know, and then, you know, even some of your own relationship as you entered that family.
Yes, it was actually a wonderful experience to find out I was going to be in this family because that was in, 1986, I married Jeff, her stepson, and I had met her a decade before at college. She had attended Agnes Scott College, and that's where I went to school. And she was on the board of directors at the time. She had just had a book come out. She was a very well-known inspirational author, and I had all of her books. And I was very privileged to be her escort for the weekend while she was there. And we had wonderful conversations. And I came from a not so great home with lots of issues and an alcoholic father and a lot of mental illness there and abuse. And so I had asked her if, she thought that at some point I could marry into a strong Christian family, having no idea that I was speaking to someone who could have been my mother-in-law if she had lived long enough to have met me in that context. But it had always been my husband's prayer that his mother would get to know his future wife. And so I thought that was very sweet how that was all wrapped together. So I knew her mostly through her writings, which I think is an interesting way to get to know someone like that.
Well, very, Very. And mm-hmm. I don't even know how many books she wrote over the years. It had to have been in the close to 20, I'm guessing. I'm not sure.
Yes, lots of books in the, I'm not even exactly sure. I think it's closer to 30 by the time all the different variations of them have come out.
Yes, so. And I just spotted that actually in materials in front of me. Mm-hmm. Best-selling author of 30 books. Wow.
And I think it's interesting, too, because I have this fabulous quote of hers that she was talking about her own book, Christy, and yet she was speaking about everything she did, because this story is about her mother.
Right.
And so her mother was a huge influence on her life. And Catherine had said, faith is a challenge. It was faith that took my mother into the mountains on a wild adventure. It is my inheritance from her and from my father. I could not have done anything I have done without it.
Wow.
And I just think that is so powerful, that this story that she wanted to write was about her mother, but her mother's influence had been with her since day one and was very much an impactful thing for her in developing her own spiritual journey and faith story.
I love that. What a beautiful quote. And for those who are unfamiliar with the story, Christy, and Christy, Catherine Marshall is probably best known for her novel, Christy. There are other titles that would probably rise up and be near that one. But Christy was, in fact, as you just said, based on the life of her mother. That alone is amazing, too, as you read it and think, this is really historical fiction, but not called that because of the timing of it. It has to be within a certain era, et cetera. I don't know if it's historical fiction today. Is it?
You know, that's a very interesting question, because when it came out, it was just fiction. It was released. There wasn't a genre of Christian fiction.
Sure.
There wasn't, you know, it was just a novel. Mm-hmm. And I think it was received so well across all ages and all
every faith. You know. Yes, I was going to say every faith. You know, this was a New York Times best-selling book at that time, and that's interesting. Yeah, there wasn't Christian fiction at the
time.
There
wasn't, and I think the other thing that was fascinating. Now, this will tell you a little bit of the change in the times, but it used to be required reading for seventh graders. It was on, you know, in public schools. So
no kidding.
Yes, it really did, and so that it was just that kind of a book. It was very well written, and you know, I think a funny story is that was one book I had never read. I read all of her inspirational books. I didn't read her fiction books until I actually met the real Christy here at Evergreen Farm.
Wow.
I'm meeting Leonora Wood, Catherine's mother, for the first time. And I was like going, I think I better go read that
Right.
It was very odd reading it after I had met the person about whom it was written.
Oh, interesting.
I kept pausing and thinking, wait, this is a real story, you know, because I was so caught up in the novel itself.
Right.
It really propels you with the characterizations and the story and the intrigue and the difficulties, the challenges that Christy faces. So you keep reading when you start the story.
I can't. So, and these are just, you know, statistics really, but they do have meaning as this story has, passed the test of time. Do you know how many copies Christy has sold in the last 50 years?
You know, they didn't used to count the way they count now.
True.
We know at least 10 million copies have been sold.
Whoa. Okay.
And that's a lot of books.
You're not kidding. That's a boatload of books. For people not familiar with the story of Christy, can you give a thumbnail sketch of what the book is about, also known as what the life of Catherine Marshall's mother was about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and if you put it in the context of the early 1900s, that a 18, 19-year-old girl would be begging her parents to leave and go teach in these backwards mountains of Tennessee. Mm. She, she's leaving North Carolina and her home. And in and wanting to have this major adventure, she might as well be a modern girl today telling her parents, I'm going to go work for the Peace Corps, or I'm going
right.
to,
right.
you know, it's that, it was that far away,
yes.
even though it was just one state away in terms of travel and time and all of that, she might as well have been going abroad. And certainly it was to another time and place, a very different time with many challenges, the poverty of the area, the children, many of them did not have shoes, they did not have coats or clothes that were appropriate for the area, the weather. And they were very superstitious but very proud people, the Scotch-Irish, the Highlanders, as they were called in that area. They had kind of been tucked away in this cove for so long that they had kept their social customs and mores that had been passed down for generations. And so here comes our very idealistic young 19-year-old armed with all her education, and she's going to teach these students how to read. She's going to teach them modern ways. She's going to get them into college. She's going to help them be different. And she comes head on right into a community where they're looking at her as the outsider, the do-gooder, the person who's trying to come and change everything about them that they hold dear. And so the clash begins between her very energetic multiple ideas of how she's going to make a difference and the reality of a community that is saying, who are you and what are you trying to do to us? So she has to learn. And I think the one thing I love about this book is that there are three, really four or five main characters, but of the people that have ways they think of doing things, there's her mentor, Miss Alice.
Yes.
Who was a Quaker woman who had been involved in helping to start a number of these schools and often was on her horse going around several of these schools in different areas. And she was a wise woman, older, and more of a mentor for Christy, someone that could challenge her and challenge her thinking and then also be there to be a soft place to land when things weren't going quite so well. And then there was David Grantland, a single pastor who had come to convert the souls of these folks, and he often didn't understand really who they were. So he had his own way of approaching what these mountain people needed. And then there was Dr. McNeil, who was sort of a mix of both inside and out, because he had grown up there, but he had had his education at the benefit of some doctors who had come hunting, and he had been their guide. They had sent him off for medical school, and he brought that education and experiences back to the community. So he knew the folks from the very beginning, was part of them, and yet had also experienced this outside world. So you have all these people who are part of and yet approaching the community differently. And I think that's just a real microcosm for what a lot of young people have done over the years and are doing now and will do. I particularly love the generation that has been coming up lately. They have such a passion for social justice. They have such a passion for being a change agent, for doing good, for, you know, even businesses. I mean, whether it's buy a pair of glasses, give a pair of glasses,
yes.
or shoes or that
right.
kind of thing.
Yes.
You know, the impetus is on how to take what you do in business and make a difference. And they have even created this whole new endeavor called social enterprise or social
yes.
entrepreneurship that is fascinating to me. Well, let's take Christy. She wanted supplies. So, you know, I'm not going to tell everything about what she did, but
right.
She had her little own social entrepreneur venture going on to make sure that the kids could have have what they needed. So
I love
that. The themes are really the same. If you have a heart for people, you desire from the innermost parts of your being to make a difference in one person's life or a community's life, and then you're just willing to learn. You're willing to take the challenge head on and not be so headstrong that you're trying to impose yourself on others, but you learn to live with the issues and with the problems and then make a difference from the inside out. So that's why I think Christy is so timeless and why it continues to be enjoyed. My daughter just read it for the first time.
Oh,
she's
really?
25.
Oh,
yes,
I love it. Okay.
She's 25, all right. And she loved it. And she said, Mom, this may be set way back when, but it's today's story.
Absolutely, so, it is.
So I'm really hoping we can introduce it to a new generation. We have this new edition out.
It's beautiful.
And it is also an ebook for the first time. We're excited about that.
I didn't know that it wasn't an ebook before now. I'm elated at that. That's terrific.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking about you too and how you have intersected this story in your own way. And as I read your bio at the beginning, I think about your years in 1960 and, you know, how did growing up during the civil rights era, influence you and shape you to become the person that you are today? You know, you're your own Christy in a different way. I mean, I'd love to hear a little bit about that.
Well, I tell you, that was probably one of the most powerful times of my life, because I had Miss Alice type living in my own home, my own mother.
Okay.
She was a remarkable woman who. It was not usual to be an attorney back then. She was one of I believe two women in her law school class in the late 40s. Mm. And so when she used to take me with her, she did pro bono work in the juvenile facilities there. And she used to take me with her when she would be meeting with clients. Mm. And I just somehow caught from her this sense of justice and righteousness and how you have to stay involved in that. And so in the 60s, I attended a high school that was one block away from the invisible black-white line in the city of Atlanta.
Huh.
And it had been around for a very long time. And back in World War II, there were four high schools. There were two there was a girls' high and a boys' high, and then there was an African-American high for boys and one for girls, too, and that was how it was. So then you have, by the time I'm in school, we have 26 public schools. Everything is integrated, but there was a pretty strong movement out of the city to be in the more white schools, which my mom said we weren't going to do, and I was very glad about.
Yes.
Federal court ordered desegregation came along, and our high school went from being 70% white to 30% white in 1 year. And it happened to be the year that I was a junior and senior. It spanned those 2 years.
Okay.
And what was fascinating about it was that I was on student council at the time. I was president of the student body, and Martin Luther King's children attended our school, and Yolanda King was on my student council. We could have a cabinet.
Wow.
We were very official. We could have a cabinet. And so she was on for the junior class, and it was just a really remarkable time to be engaged in. I didn't even attend class my senior year. Don't tell all those colleges that. But I was so engaged in working with the Atlanta School Board, working with the 26 Atlanta high schools about how we could have peaceful change in this area. It was a very turbulent time.
That's incredible for a senior.
Very turbulent.
Yes.
We had high school curfews. We had to be in by 10. There was a lot of violence. It was not an easy thing. Mm-hmm. And then we had outsiders coming in from San Francisco who attempted to change what we were doing and foment a riot in our school. So, yeah, I think that was the beginning of, okay, you know, I'm going to stand for what is right and true, and I don't care what it means. And it was a wonderful experience for me. It shaped me in many ways to see how people of varying viewpoints could actually have conversations about it. It isn't that different now.
I was just about to launch into that and ask your thoughts about today. But I feel like it's harder to have the good conversations. I feel like there's less willingness. I think there are many things that, that are the same. Sadly, the climate, unfortunately, is still the same, but I feel like people are less willing to have good conversations.
I think that's true. I mean, I'm reflecting back on, okay, so they appointed myself as the white girl, and they appointed Reginald Blue from the closest school to the black-white line. Like, mine was on the white side. His was on the black side at that time in the 70s and early, you know. Yep. And so it was 70-71 when all this was going on. Mm-hmm. And it's just fascinating because they appointed the two of us to be on the Atlanta School Board to assist with this. So they brought in a consultant from California about what they were doing out in California to help with race relations. Mm-hmm. And it was subliminal advertising, which has since been outlawed.
Wow.
That used to be the thing where when you went to the movies, they would flash the Coke
or the popcorn
and suddenly you'd get hungry.
Wow.
It was so quick. So they had these slides, and they were slides of children, you know, and they were children of different colors with their arms around each other. And that's what they were going to put in the movies that teenagers went to go see.
Wow.
And I looked at Reginald and he looked at me and we burst out laughing. And in the meeting, in front of all these adults, and we said, that is not how you change hearts. Mm. And we said, Reginald and I are talking all the time about what we can do as leaders of our school to help this, you know, have conversations.
Yes.
We are friends. We don't want to be manipulated. We don't want you to try to manipulate us subliminally through advertising.
Right.
So I think, you know, it takes courage to be able to enter into conversations rather than just take to social media. Social media allows you to spout your view, sure, but it doesn't get you eyeball to eyeball with somebody that you might have a difference with, where you can learn to just have a conversation.
Yes.
And I would love to see more of that now. I think it's going to take some courageous young people to do that.
Mm. Boy, that's really interesting to hear your perspective. And I guess I'm not surprised that you taught history in middle school and high school, you know, before becoming a lawyer. I love that my son just got married in June, but in May he finished his master's at University of South Carolina in public history, and his undergrad was in history at University of Illinois. His specialty or area of expertise is Civil War era history, and so he feels strongly about some of the things that you're talking about, and opening up conversation and not rewriting history, but talking about the history, what really did happen, and how do we move forward today? And
I know. I think we have to be courageous enough to confront our past. And okay, what does that mean? Does that mean pulling down a statue? You know, maybe. But if there's no dialogue about it, what does it mean?
Thank you.
You know, I think that's what's so confusing, for example, to speak about a current event with the NFL right now, because people don't know what the dialogue is all about. Is
Absolutely.
It about the flag and patriotism? Is it about,
the anthem specifically or?
Yeah, exactly. What is it about? Yeah. And where's the conversations? And so, pitting people against each other isn't going to get us there.
Mm-mm.
But I think it may take this wonderful Christy era young people generation. I'm counting on the millennials. Mm-hmm. They are going to overtake us baby boomers by the year 2020.
Oh,
so
that
we don't have long to be opinionated.
You're right. And to be honest, I will say I see there is a segment of boomers that resonates very much with millennial thinking.
I'd agree with that.
Yes,
I very much agree with that. And I think those are the folks like myself. Just give me a bunch of my daughters and sons' friends.
Yes.
I am so happy because
Preach.
I am so encouraged with where people are. I think we do have a lot of hope for our future.
I agree.
And they're making, like, I have to tell you this wonderful story about this young woman who was teaching in an impoverished school district in Charleston, South Carolina. Mm. And she happens to be the daughter of the producer of the CBS TV show, Tom Bloomquist. And Tom and I have remained friends over the years. And
The TV show, specifically the TV show Christy?
The TV show Christy,
okay,
yes.
Thank you.
And his daughter is a teacher in Charleston, South Carolina. And she was looking at her kids one day and she was going, they don't have bikes. Mm. They don't have a way to feel the wind in their face, the freedom of being able to get someplace. And I thought to myself, you know what? I was all over Atlanta on my bike. I mean, it was our way of getting around when we were kids. And so she started a GoFundMe campaign and was able to purchase a bike for every single one of her students. And it caught national attention. Mm-hmm. She was on the Steve Harvey show. She was on NBC. She was on all sorts of shows as if this was a surprise that a young person would see a need and care about it and go do something about it. This is the millennials now, and what makes me so excited. They don't just always say, this is awful. I can't believe this is happening.
They
put their feet and their hands along with their mouths to go do something.
Yeah.
And I just think what Katie did there is so much like what Christy did. Mm-hmm. You know, what all of us can do, and I'm with you on that. I hope that we see more and more Christy-like folks as these wonderful millennials who want to disrupt things and not do it the same way.
Yes.
You know, some of that's going to fail, and some of it's going to be fabulous.
Right.
So just try.
Exactly.
Just try.
And they don't go through 20 committees to make it happen, too.
Exactly. You know? Well, that's true. They do tend to, I mean, it's sort of like Christy. She had to be reined in a little bit by Miss Alice, because Miss Alice was like, you know, it's not just about you.
Right,
you know?
Right. And that's where, good mentors come in. And sometimes I think the boomers, we've kind of dropped the ball and have not been there for some of the millennials. And I think, you know, to be open and aware, and but to not squelch that beautiful action that is just brewing beneath the surface, to encourage that and give good direction. You know, I think there's so much here. I am hoping that a new generation reads Christy. I think it resonates especially with young women, because there's this beautiful, strong female character, and I love that for anyone reading Christy, but I think especially young women in the church. I grew up in a stream of evangelicalism that said, you know, more often that said women can't, and I think today they're starting to say women can, and I'm grateful for that.
And let's face it, it's still there.
Yes,
and it's still there, not only in the church, but it's still there in the workplace.
You're right.
You know, and so it's going to take, you know, a lot of effort, I think, on the part of these young people to continue to make that kind of a difference. I loved what you said about mentorship, and I think this is a place, unlike when I was growing up, young people kind of rejected the wisdom and the friendship of the older generation.
Yes.
And I don't sense that.
No.
I have these marvelous friends that are in their 20s and 30s. And
I think they're looking for it today. Millennials are.
I think so, too. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lesson to all of us who read Christy, perhaps not 50 years ago, but, but, you know, earlier, that we can now move into our Miss Alice phase, whereas we may have used to have been our, you know, Christy was inspirational to us to go be our own Christy, that there's a role for both of these, that's how, you know, it's a wonderful thing to think about the issues that they care about. They care about social justice. Yes. They care about people. You know, they just care about people.
Exactly. You know, I am even just listening to your own story and as it relates to the story of Christy. Do you have writing in your future, or have you?
I have written. I actually wrote a Christy children's story years ago.
But I'm wondering about a memoir. I think of your time in the 60s and 70s. I am fascinated just hearing you tell about it verbally here. I would love to read about it and some of your thoughts.
I'll tell you that I came at it. I wrote a series called Liberty Letters that's still in print.
It's
four books, and it's for young adults, probably younger than what we call young adults now, maybe 10 to 13-ish.
Sure.
But it came out of the fact that I tried to figure out why I was the way I was.
Yes, good.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Why do I care so much about these issues, and why am I like this? And I started thinking about my mother, and I realized that she was hitting her teen years in World War II, and she single-handedly ran an entire campaign for during World War II for raising money for bonds and things like that, the Victory Gardens, all of that. She did all of that.
Wow.
She was president of her student body. She was out there doing all these things. And I thought, well, then why was she the way she was? And then I realized that her mother was a World War I person during her teenage years. And I thought, you know what? That's so fascinating, because when 9/11 happened, my response was, we have to do something about this. You know, we've got to be courageous. We've got to, you know, and my friends were like, I'm moving. We're in D.C. I'm getting out of D.C. I was going, why do we get out of D.C.? We have to do something. And I thought, okay, so I did this series of books for young girls in particular.
Oh, I love it.
That are based on strong girl characters.
I love it.
And it's basically the concept of what happens when an ordinary girl, just like myself, I just happened to be a high school student at a particular high school that had been the first integrated high school in Atlanta back in the early 60s. So, and the high school of Martin Luther King's kids. So it was an object. It was a national object. So, of course, they picked us as the beginning school for federal ordered balance. You know, you were to reflect the balance of the population in the city. And there was more white flight. And my mom and I were looking at each other going, why? Why would people do that? This is a wonderful school. This is a great neighborhood.
I just love hearing that. Yes.
And so, you know, there I was, just an ordinary student, never really expected to be student body president, but I cared so much about these issues. I ran on them and I got elected. And so I was thrust into an unusual circumstance, not of my own making, and I had to decide, who was I going to be? And that's what those Liberty Letters series are about.
You
so I have
stood
one
up and
on
responded.
Civil War.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
And one from Jamestown, one about Pearl Harbor, and one on the Underground Railroad, and it's based on Evergreen Farm, which is the where I live, and the farm that where Leonora lived till she was 94.
Wow.
And, you know, it was part of the Underground Railroad movement back in the early, it's a 200-year-old house. So
you come by all of this honestly. I mean, you know, but you've looked back and to see
and asked,
that
why
history.
Why am I this weird person?
I mean, I resonate so deeply. I did similar things because my mother befriended Native Americans in Northern Maine when no one else would, and her father hired them to work when others wouldn't. She was just a youngster, and I wrote a not called historical fiction, but fiction based on that. And right. So I look back to, again, to the generations and go, why am I this way? Why? So I love mm-hmm. hearing that about you. Okay. So
do you kind of wish we'd been born as a millennial?
Sometimes, but I think, you know, my husband and I both were like, we might not have been born in that era, but we have those same sensibilities and sensitivities, mm-hmm. and we are doing and saying what we can today. You know, I think we mm-hmm. you have to bloom where you're planted and
right.
be that person today. But yes, honestly, sometimes I do secretly think that.
Yes, we could have a GoFundMe campaign yeah. for everything we care about.
Exactly. Hey, let me ask you some other questions. Let me just say this too, for folks that know and are familiar with Faith Conversations, you know that I post links to everything at AnitaLustria.com, and you'll find out, you'll get a link to Liberty Letters and obviously to this beautiful new edition of Christie, and links to whatever Nancy tells me to have links to here, Nancy LaSword. We'll have all that there for you. Also a reminder that if you have questions or comments on the podcast, I would love to hear from you. You can email me at faithconvo@gmail.com. Again, faithconvo@gmail.com. And Nancy, friends familiar with the podcast know that they can also give easily via PayPal to support the podcast. They can do that with the email address producer@AnitaLustria.com. Okay, got all the commercial stuff out of the way. I would love to hear also from you your thoughts on Christie, this amazing book, and how it did shape Christian fiction. Because as you said earlier, Christian fiction as a genre really didn't exist when Christie came out. But today there's even an award for Christian fiction called the Christie Award. So I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on that and Christie and the way it has shaped what Christian fiction looks like today.
Yes, I really am excited that the Christie Awards have been around for such a long time.
When did they start, or how
gosh,
long? Do you know how
what?
Long they've been around?
I don't
know either.
99, I think.
Okay, so yeah.
I think it was 99, so we're coming up on 20 years.
Yes, okay.
And it's just wonderful when we were approached as a family about would we lend the Christie name and logo to this award. The desire was to inspire new authors and to allow them to speak to themes. It didn't have to be, overtly Christian. The books, that was actually one of the things that I was strongly caring about, because there are, you'll read Christie now and you'll think this could be a Christian book, but it wasn't received that way in 67 because it was just themes of faith in general, and how do you apply beliefs? How do you struggle through doubt? Christie was not, necessarily, mm-hmm. she wasn't like, rock solid in her faith when she went off to do all these things. She had to mature and grow too. So how do you present these kinds of themes?
Can I ask a question in the midst of that? So as I've viewed Christian publishing, I love what you just said about how at the beginning of Christian fiction, rather, not publishing, but mm-hmm. how the themes didn't necessarily have to be overtly Christian themes. I feel like that's changed through the years, but I feel like, and I think there was a time in Christian fiction where I just wanted to not read any of it, just to everything tied up neatly with a bow. I mean, that is not real life. I do feel that there is a return, or hopefully a return to a Christie type kind of writing, mm-hmm. a solid quality writing that truly engages the mind as well as it does engages our intellect well as it does our soul as we go. What are your thoughts there? Do you see a shift?
I do. And absolutely. I think that one of the things the Christie Award has tried to do over the years is to pull those books in and to reward them.
Nice.
And I've been very pleased with that. That
nice.
It hasn't just been, okay, if you tick the boxes of a mm-hmm. genre. The judges are all professionals in the field, and they've kept a very high standard for writing and for excuse me, and for the themes not to have to be in your face, so to speak. And I think about this, you know, okay, Christie was on the New York Times bestseller list for almost 40 weeks.
Oh, Christie, my goodness. I missed that. No way.
And Christie, the movie rights were bought by MGM, and there was a script written by a Oscar-winning writer who had done Funny Girl with Barbara Streisand back then. And, you know, it was going to be a motion picture, a major motion.
What happened?
What happened is so sad to Catherine. I mean, it was really one of her biggest disappointments. It was, well, think about the year. Okay, so we're now in like 1969. The movie's in pre-production. A very well-known director, award-winning scriptwriter. In fact, I just picked up a copy of the script through eBay.
Okay. Oh, no way.
I was so excited. I'm looking at it now.
Wow.
Metron Goldwyn Mayer.
Whoa.
No one is authorized to dispose of same. Okay. Anyway, it was the script, everything was ready, and they were, the studio was sold. And when it was sold, every single picture that was in production was canceled because they wanted to go a different direction.
It wasn't just Christie that was canceled. Every single
production. Everything was canceled.
I guess if you're going to feel good.
And it went to the vault, went down to the basement, and it stayed there for a very, very long time. So that's why I know that Catherine would have loved seeing the series come to life.
Yes. But, and you can still get the series.
It's hard.
Is it?
Yes. In fact, that's one of the things we want to do is we want to find out if we can get it back out and more available. But
any hope for the movie to come back out?
You know, I still hope. I mean, Catherine had always loved The Sound of Music and was hoping that there would one day be a full screen motion picture that was a musical version of this. And that would be very interesting.
Wow. Yeah.
But there's still hope. You never know. I think things have to, you know, it would take someone with a vision for that. But to circle back to what you're saying about the Christie Awards, I think at that time, and what I meant by the movie, there was a heated bidding war for these movie rights. Why? Yes, it was a novel. Yes, it was on the New York Times bestseller list. But what was it about the book that people in the secular industries were bidding for it to bring it to the screen? And I think that's why we need more books like that. We need to impact culture through the screen. And to, you know, everything that's going on in Hollywood right now is a breakout time.
I'm with you. Boy, so interesting to hear all that. I had no idea. Okay, so as we kind of wrap up here today, I could go on and on, but maybe two questions. What haven't you said that needs to be said today about Christie? And then also, you know, I think, so having made a big move from Chicago to Florida, I'm around more retired people, and I would love for you to do two things here. Say what you haven't said yet that you want to make sure you say, and also maybe give a charge to millennials are out there doing it. Give a charge to retired people to keep moving forward with purpose. Any of us at any life stage, not to get so buried in the day-to-day little details that we don't have the bigger picture. So I'll let you wax eloquent here, Nancy.
Well, the one thing about this, you know, people may be saying, why should I buy a new book? I've got an old paperback. I would highly encourage you to buy this book.
There's cool things in it. Tell about the cool things.
It's really special in that we decided, this is a big change, but we decided to put the real Leonora on the cover. This is the picture of her it's a hardback edition with a lovely dust cover, and it is it would be fabulous for Christmas gifts. But I like that we are featuring her for the first time, And
tell who Leonora is for those that
Leonora is Catherine's mother,
yes.
And that's who lived. And Catherine herself said a good 60-70% of everything in the novel is real.
Yeah.
It really happened.
Yep.
We are working on a book trailer now that will be available soon, I hope.
Nice.
That is featuring a number of the images from Leonora, the real Christie's scrapbook of the when she was there at the mission.
Oh, I love it.
And
okay.
So it is, I'm excited about that. The charge, I have this thing, I joke, you know, the poem, do not go darkly, do not go quietly into that dark night.
Yes.
That's how I feel about getting older.
Yeah.
I just...
Good.
Don't think I can change who I am.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the energy may be a tad lower, but there are wonderful ways. We have resources of wisdom. Some of us have resources of money, business guidance, things that these young millennials can take from us mm-hmm. and join with us. And we can be part of this change. We can make a difference now. It's not time to sit in the rocker.
Good.
We got to get out there and go meet some millennials and get to know them, because they're wonderful people with phenomenal ideas, and they don't all have enough life experience yet to know where some of the pitfalls are. But if we come alongside and we're friends and they're open to hearing from us, then we can help them to really maximize their potential. So I would encourage everyone, young and old, to get together and have conversations.
Love it. Oh, you're speaking my language. Oh, folks, this is Nancy Lasord. She is daughter-in-law of Catherine Marshall, the author of the New York Times best-selling book, Christie. This is the 50th anniversary year. If you have not read it, then you do need to get a copy and read it. This beautiful 50th anniversary edition is just terrific, and it would be a great one for you to get a hold of. I'll have links to all of that at anitalustria.com. Nancy, thanks for sharing some of your story as well as all of this fascinating backstory about Christie. Really, really have appreciated having you on the podcast. Thank you. And to everyone else, as usual, I say keep the conversation going.